Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a 5-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice.
And a happy Sunday. It is January 22nd, 2023. This is Chase, as always, joined by Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
Yeah, doing awesome, Chase. Got two more games to recap here, and good to close the week here on a high note.
So they say from the Tim Floyd days, if you want to make the if you want to perform well in conference, I don't know if it's even make the NCAA tournament necessarily, but perform well in conference, you have to win at home and split on the road. And road trip to Arizona is, going to be, even though the trip, the travel itself is amongst the easiest, the games are amongst the hardest. We have McHale, toughest place to play in the Pac-12, certainly historically for USC. And then Arizona State, not as historically tough a venue, but a team that's been pretty good this season, came into this weekend with only three losses. And the LA schools both lost at McHale and both won at Desert Financial in Tempe. We got some things sorted out with the Pac-12, some things not sorted out. I think the big story for the conference-wise for this weekend, I think, is the return of Arizona to prominence. The defensive performances for Arizona in both the USC and UCLA games were, pretty stellar, much better than we've seen from Arizona in recent games. So they looked alive and well. SC, really struggled, and McHale down, in the range of, 15 points about the entire game or most of it, and ended up losing by 15. Bounce back. Arizona State comes into the game last night, a 3.5-point dog, and really just dominates. I mean, I think the final margin was only 8 because it's this kind of dead cat run that the Sun Devils decided to go through at the last 3 minutes of the game, and Hurley just decided to score, completely lose his mind, screaming at the officials. But SC was actually up by 22 points with about 4.5 minutes to go. So anyway, that's the results from this week. It was a split. And heading into these games, I think you would ask me, would you take 1-2 over the next 3 games, which includes UCLA? And I said no, because I think we had a chance to do better than 1-2. And I think we do have a chance to do better than 1-2. Certainly no guarantee. But I think the results all told, really disappointing Thursday night, really impressive Saturday night, potentially maybe the best game we played all season.
Yeah, and maybe the best game that any Pac-12 team has played all season, at least through 36 minutes, right? If you scratch out that last 4 minutes where, they started mugging our players and Hurley intimidated the officials and all that, we weren't strong with the ball and threw the ball away. On top of that, for 36 minutes, I think it's, that performance. I think it's Oregon's home win over Arizona is in consideration there. You could maybe throw Arizona against us. I thought they were really impressive against us. Through 36 minutes in that ASU game, that was just really high level stuff from USC. That was top 5 to 10 in the country good. So really good to see us get to that level on both ends of the ball. I thought, the man D was good. We struggled a little bit on the glass. We kind of did that 1-3-1 zone instead of the 2-3. And that was more effective, I thought, the 2-3 in general. That was new, and ASU had some issues with that. And the other big story is Vince, right? Just starting to look more and more comfortable, especially on the offensive ends. He's going to be a dude on the offensive glass. He has better touch than I anticipated. Really smooth from the line, and it definitely seems like he can, hit a right-handed jump hook with ease if he's one-on-one in the post there. So really excited to see how he continues to grow and perform. overall, just happy with that effort. And with the Arizona game, yeah, they were just better. They made a lot of threes. Ramey's shot was going. Tubelis was a beast on the glass. And their defense just was better than we've seen all season from them. So overall, happy with the split for sure.
Yeah, so just drilling into the Arizona game a little bit, we really struggled to get our offense going, to even really get passes around the perimeter going in the offense. Arizona, I mean, they played a really intense level of defense, and we really didn't kind of get back cuts in there. I can just tell you from being both locations, the atmosphere at McHale is much more intimidating than the atmosphere at Desert Financial, even though Desert Financial is mostly full, but McHale is a very unique atmosphere. There are other venues in the country for college basketball that are similar, but I don't think any of them are in the Pac-12. So for the Pac-12, that's as intimidating as it gets. It was just a case of us not really ever getting our thing. The game was never really close. We never really got anything going. And, you know, we struggled shooting. Boogie was, 2 for 11 in that game. Drew actually played, shot pretty well relative to everyone else. But I think all our starters shot under 50%. No one really had it going on really well. I do have some plus minus stuff from that game, which I don't know how relevant this is, but every player that played like 20 possessions or more was essentially underwater on plus minus, except the two, funny enough, were Malik Thomas and Vince. And I think Malik Thomas, part of that is because he was in at the end of the game when we were actually kind of scoring some points. And that probably explains that part of it. Vince played a little bit more. We were positive when he was on the court. When Joshua was on the court, our offense really struggled. It was actually better than the defense was actually better than when Vince was on the court, but the offense was just much better with Vince. On last night, Saturday, Warren Washington was he was the best player on the court for Arizona State, clearly. Yep. And against Josh Morgan, he really was effective, and Morgan was very limited. He really couldn't get a lot going with Warren Washington. Vince, when he was actually going up one-on-one in the post, could actually get some things done. He could score on Warren Washington, which Morgan couldn't do. So both of them, by the way, now Vince had some more rebounds yesterday, but against Arizona, like the rebounding from our five position was really poor, right? So Morgan had three rebounds in that game. Vince had one rebound in that game, zero defensive rebounds. And those guys played 40 minutes of basketball, producing four rebounds. Tubelis had 17 rebounds, and Ballo had seven rebounds. So, that was a really tough – and then Cedric Henderson had seven rebounds, too. And he kind of hurt us quite a bit, especially with some of his offensive rebounding. So, the Arizona game, in a way, I mean, they played really tough defense on us. So, that might have just gone their way anyway. But they definitely – that game exposed a lot of the problems we had on the season. Arizona had the 12 offensive rebounds. We only had 25 defensive rebounds. So, they're getting one out of every three rebounds. We shot 4 for 17 from three, and they shot 12 for 24, so 50% from three. They shot much better. From my observation from being there, I didn't particularly think that they actually hit a lot of contested threes. I think they were a lot of them looked like, quite frankly, lazy closeouts on some of these plays. And maybe I need to rewatch it because I was a little bit close to the court and didn't have the best view on everything. But I when you're shooting 50%, it's at this point, I think it's more than just, for me, is more than luck. I think this is kind of a trend. Now, we came back yesterday and we're much better about that. Much better. Arizona State only hit 5 of 22. They did miss some open threes, but they were kind of going up against our zone defense, and they felt out of rhythm, I think, for them quite a bit. We shot decently from three yesterday, 7 of 18. Not not just, you know, was it a killer, but we hit most of our open threes or the majority of our open threes yesterday. So that was a good thing. So anyway, I know, you know, you've been more loath to have definitive opinions about a 3-point shooting and kind of been more willing to chalk this up to some random, more of a randomness factor. But what did you think about, you know, Arizona hitting those threes against us on Thursday?
You know, I think some of it was just overloading on Tubelis to stop him. And, you know, you'd have the guard like rotating over and like swiping at the ball and just trying to make his life more difficult. And he didn't have like an exceptional offensive game, right? Like the guy who killed us was Ramey. Ramey hit 5 threes. And with the, you know, the rebounding stats, I mean, I think Arizona just wanted it more. I mean, sure, like, you know, their personnel, they have good rebounding personnel, but their effort both on defense and on the glass on both ends, I think, was just superior to ours overall. Whereas with the ASU game, I think you saw that in pieces. You know, with the 3-point shooting, I think like the ASU game kind of showed like the randomness to it, right? Like if we're going 7 of 18 from three, we're going to win most of those games just because we're so good inside the arc on defense, especially. And, you know, our turnover margins kind of normalized from being poor to like average. And we made our free throws. But yeah, like I thought, you know, 3-point D was pretty good against ASU. I thought Nunez, there were some of his possessions where, you know, we left him too uncontested, and he's a really good standstill shooter. One of his threes was, you know, off the dribble where we did contest it. He made an off the dribble three. It's a pretty tough shot. So, and then with Arizona, right? They've missed a lot of uncontested threes this year. And, you know, against UCLA, they didn't even shoot it that well. They were 5 for 18 from three, and they just happened to hit a lot against us. I definitely think there's some randomness, but we were better overall in the ASU game, I think primarily because we just weren't concerned with their post threats like we were in the Arizona game.
Yeah. One little interesting thing that happened in the Arizona game is very early we went to a double big lineup. Right? You know, we start off struggling, went to that double big lineup, and it actually was pretty effective. And Tommy Lloyd countered that by taking Ballo out of the game and playing small. We continued with for a bit, and then we switched. Then if I was going to pick a moment in time, it was very early in the game, we substituted in Niagu for both bigs and just used Niagu as the lone big against Tubelis as the lone big for Arizona. And that kind of spurred Arizona to go on a run, and they took a lead that they really didn't surrender for the rest of the game. There was also a point in the second half, I think, where Kobe just got, a typical play for Kirk Caruso. Kirk Caruso, by the way, is one of the most, he's not just a really kind of poor sport, but he's a very dangerous player. You can see that live. He just throws his body in front of people haphazardly. I guess I'm going to drop his name, but I was talking to Rich Rubin from On Three during the game, and just point. I said, you know, it's not just the, you know, him taking flops. He's dangerous. And Rubin said, yeah, he's a dirty player, or he's borderline dirty player. And he, you know, him diving at the legs of Kobe caused Kobe to roll an ankle. Now, luckily, didn't seem to be too bad. Although I didn't see Kobe was still favoring it last night, clearly. But he was able to go and get some important moments. And when that happened, that kind of just deflated us for the rest. I mean, I really didn't have much left in the tank after that. I will be curious to see what happens at Galen. I think, you know, Arizona, when they play their best, they're very tough. I actually could see them coming back and being competitive with UCLA to actually win the conference. We'll see if that actually happens. But I do think we'd have a chance against them at Galen if we play a certain style and guard the three, if, you know, depending on what the situation is with Vince come that time of kind of the season, which will be late in the season. So we'll see how that comes along and what happens there. But that was an interesting note on that game. I guess my other note on Arizona State, you know, it was a pretty good, solid team effort. Trey White, too, which is kind of too during the garbage time run that Arizona State went through. But he was tough a lot of that game. He played really tough basketball, got a lot of rebounds. You know, he's going to, you know, hopefully he sticks around for a bit for SC. You know, fouling out, I think. You know, a really good player. You know, Kobe played a really nice game despite being clearly not being 100%. We saw Malik Thomas did not get in the game against Arizona State. We went with Isaiah Sellers instead. We shortened up the bench. Hornery only got in at the very end for like potential free throw purposes. So we had shortened up the bench in that game. And, you know, I think that might have worked for well for us. You know, the Sellers thing, he actually hit a shot at the end of the half. So we'll have to see. I'm still a little bit unsure if he's quite ready to go yet, but yeah, definitely the big story, I think, is Vince and the progress he's just made in these last few games.
Yeah, I kind of like the Sellers move, actually. You know, I don't know if he's like a high major level athlete, but one thing that, you know, I think he, on the wing D, I think he knows where to be, and he gets into a stance, and he doesn't, like, you know, he's never over aggressive and picking up fouls on that end, which I think is a plus. So then he doesn't turn the ball over too, which is also nice. Like, you know, his Malik and Reese turn the ball over like almost three times at the rate that Ozaiah does. So, and I think that's a big thing too. So if he can make a few open shots, like maybe giving him 10 minutes a game isn't the worst idea here. So it was good to see him knock down that one pull up just because he struggled overall this year with the shooting. So that was good to see. Kobe just makes so many winning plays. I mean, a lot of his like entry passes are really like really good passes. He had one where he zipped it into Morgan and Morgan got a foul and made both free throws. He had the offensive rebounds put back. He's just a really tough player and he makes his free throws. So I've just continued to be really impressed with him. And I think White's just continuing to develop his inside the arc game. He had a really nice play early on where he got the ball on the wing and saw he had an advantage and just blew by the guy for a layup. Just continues to be really efficient for a freshman from inside the arc. So I think he's a guy that could really make a jump in the offseason if he can get the three-point shot down.
So a couple of other things I want to mention. Something I think we should all keep in mind when we think about roster usage, things like that. We had a decided height advantage against Arizona State for most of the game, except every position but one, which is at center, where Warren Washington is a bigger guy than Joshua Morgan. But everywhere else across the court, and you know, I think that really worked to Arizona State's detriment. They couldn't really, you know, Frankie Collins is probably just under 6 feet tall. DJ Horn is probably just under 6 feet tall. Those guys played, like, I think playing 45 minutes. Nunez is about, you know, maybe an inch taller than those guys. Maybe, you know, 6'1". You played 22 minutes. Those guys are just not that tall out there, not that long of players. And, you know, it does affect things. I mean, at the end, they were able to kind of press us and stuff. But when you're just guarding conventionally in the half court, you know, they don't really close out well on guys like Peterson or Trey White. It's just harder for them. So that's something to keep in mind, that sometimes we sacrifice some of our quickness and stuff, but we do have that length that, you know, a team like Arizona State like does not have. I mean, Desmond Cambridge, who's like supposed to be their best player. And I think most games he is their best player, but he wasn't against us. I think part of that is just he's not very tall. He's not very long. And our length bothered him too. It seemed to me. So he went 3 for 11 from three. So length does matter. The other thing is for all of you who are big on the free throws, 14 for 14. So yeah. We are now for the season 72.4% from three, from free throw, not from three, from free throw line, which is not, you know, going to make anyone crazy, but it is above the national average. So we're above average for free throw shooting team this season. So conference only, by the way, where are we at? We're at 77%. So number one in the Pac-12. Okay. Anything else on these two games before we move on?
No, let's talk some Bruins here.
Yes. Okay. So UCLA, they had a much tougher time with the Sun Devils. Now they had a much better last 4 minutes of the game. So I mean, I think you're comparing 36 minutes versus the last four. UCLA much, 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 much better in the last four than we were. But we were quite a bit better than UCLA. The first 36 comes back. Again, against Arizona, they're really good in the last 4 minutes. But other than that, Arizona kind of did handle them. I know it kind of got close where it seemed like, oh, this might seem like a, you know, we're getting the game closer. One playing problem is Jaime Jaquez is not, like, if he's not hitting on all cylinders, their offense does struggle at moments. So against Arizona State, he was 3 for 9 from inside the arc, 1 for 3 from outside. Against Arizona, he was 4 for 11 from inside the arc, 1 for 6 from behind the arc. So combined, both games, he's at like 9 for 29. You know, we're talking about around, you know, under 30% there, or right around 30%, I guess. You know, that's when he's your best guy and you know, going to two games, he shoots 30%. It's tough. That's tough. Arizona, their defense was smothering on Arizona, on UCLA. And UCLA just struggled with, I think, having those two bigs and the length on Jaquez. Beyond that, you know, tight. So I think 24/7 came out with a with their own midseason all Pac-12 team, and they had Tiger Campbell like amongst the first five, I think, named on that team. Now, Tiger was really strong against Arizona State, scored 22 points, but comes back against Arizona and he's like 4 for 18 from the field. Tiger Campbell has not had like some banner offense a year. I think there's good argument to be made that he's not one of their top three players. I think Jaquez and Jalen, or he's not one of the top two players. Jaquez and Jalen Clark are the top two guys. I mean, he's important, especially when it comes to assists, but he has struggled on the offensive end. And when you don't have Jaquez and Campbell hitting, it gets a little tough for you. So, and their bench is not picking up a ton of slack. So I don't know. That's my impression. I mean, they play pretty good defense in both games. But when it comes to, you know, where they hold Arizona State to 62 points, right? So, yes. But other than the last 4 minutes against Arizona State, kind of a tough road trip for UCLA.
Yeah, here's a fun one. Where do you think, without looking, where do you think UCLA ranks in the Pac-12 in conference play in effective field goal percentage?
So great question. Because this is like a David Singleton question, right? And he's been cold, hasn't he? So I guess he had four. He had four threes against Arizona State. I'm going to guess they're seventh.
They're 10th, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
So, and overall in offense, they're second. So that just goes to show it's not all about shooting, because they're first in taking care of the ball and first in offensive rebounding. So they're kind of this all effort team, right? They get a lot of steals. They're, you know, smart. They take care of the ball. And I think that's where Tiger's value is really derived from, right? It's like he's consistently like really good in assist rate, and he's really good in turnover rate in terms of not turning it over. And he has like picked up the 3-point shooting. So he's up to 45% in conference play in 3-point shooting. What he's, you know, not doing is he's, you know, just been super cold from inside the arc. So he's down at 32% from two. So I think with him, you just have to run him off the line right now with the way he's going. And then Jalen Clark, he's really dipped in conference play. So he's down. He's sub 36 from two, and he's at 28% from three. So like in terms of their like ISO guys, like Jaime is still their best option. he's wearing down a little bit, it seems like, over his last few since that Colorado game, where he was really good. But, you know, and then Singleton, he's, you know, 28% in conference play from three. So it's just they've got this shot-making offense and – or I should say offense designed around making shots in isolation and taking care of the ball. And their guys just aren't making as many shots now. And, you know, our team, like, we're really good in terms of preventing the opponent from making shots. So it's kind of setting up, you know, especially with the crowd. It's going to be a really good crowd on Thursday. I think UCLA is going to have trouble scoring against us. The question is, like, with their defense being as good as it is, can we score enough to overcome it? I think that's kind of the variable that I'm not sure about right now.
Yeah, and so this is also going to be a big game for Mick Cronin, right? Because, you know, we just played them a couple weeks ago, and we all know how that game went. I mean, the story of the first half was this is a cruise control, easy win. The story of the second half is they scored 16 points and basically lost the lead in the last minute, had to get a rebound off a three, and they hit another three to win on some questionable offensive foul that was missed. You know, 16 points in that second half against us. So, you know, I'm not certainly not going to come in and just, oh, we're going to win for sure. But Mick's going to have to make some serious adjustments, I think, to figure out, to get their offense going again. And now there's a bit of an X factor, right? Because now there's, you have Vince down there. Now, look, Morgan played a really nice game defensively when he was in there against Bona to an extent. But really the difference in that game was Hornery. If we remember Hornery, when he would come and hedge those screens, and that really took them out of the game. I don't know if we'll try the same thing. I don't know if Vince did a pretty good job hedging screens against Arizona State. If he's able to do kind of the same thing, I mean, that's going to be even more effective because, you know, it puts a lot more pressure on Tiger when you got a guy like Vince hedging the screen rather than a guy like Hornery. So I'm curious, this is going to be a little bit of a different game. Is there any word on Bailey? Is he in the comeback trail? Do we know?
You know, I think it's unclear. You know, I think UCLA fans have talked about him coming back for a while now, and it hasn't happened. So I'm kind of in, I'll believe it when I see it mode with him, and in terms of him coming back. So,
I mean, this will be a good game for him to come back, right? Because it's going to be a high profile game. Now, of course, the Arizona game was a hugely high profile game on national television, on ABC nationwide, and he missed that. So, you know, this is turning into a bit of a trend with some of these one and done possible prospects where, you know, we saw that with, like, the same thing happened with Marcus Bagley, who would have these injuries and just kind of disappear. And eventually this season is like he disappeared without the injury. And Arizona State was actually better without him. I just think for Mari Bailey's sake, he's better off trying to get his way back on the court. I don't, you know, he's already in a little bit of a precarious position. I don't know how many, like, NBA executives are beating down, you know, going to be like jumping over each other to try to draft Amari Bailey. Like, we will really make the difference next year is Amari Bailey. He would be doing himself a lot of favors to, like, get himself back on the court, whatever he can do. Maybe that happens. I don't know. But anyway, I only bring that up because that's just, like, personnel-wise. Otherwise, it's going to be David Singleton who, look, you leave him open. We left him open the first half. He's going to hit the three. If you guard him, good chance he's going to miss it. So, that's
– Yeah, and one other thing, too, in that game is that I think Vince could potentially help with is we really lost it on the glass, right? UCLA was plus 10 on the offensive glass in that game, and Bona had 5 offensive rebounds, 10 total. And, you know, Josh Morgan had 0 rebounds total in 19 minutes. So there were some plays like Vince in that ASU game. I thought on the offensive glass, he was really good and really active. And, on the defensive glass, he didn't really know where to be, and didn't box out a couple times. So I think a lot of that is fixable. He definitely has the chance to be a really good defensive rebounder. So I think if he can lock in for that game on the defensive glass, that could be a big boost as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, let's bounce around the conference a little bit. Things somewhat played to expectations, I guess, on Thursday night, in the sense that, let's see, we had Utah swept at home against the Washington schools. Colorado ended up also sweeping, right? Because no, they lost at home to Washington. So they lost at home to Washington, came back, won a narrow one today against Washington State because KJ Simpson hit a big three at the buzzer. Colorado, definitely, I think, one of the more disappointing teams in the conference. I mean, in the sense that, like, they clearly can do a little better, and I think KJ Simpson is really one of the top players. But you know, when they're 12-9, it's going to be their argument to make the tournament is going to be really rough if they can't. You know, I don't know where they're going to finish, but it's. I think Pomovoy has them like projected to, I think, go 5-5 to finish this. You know, to finish out the season. Well, that would put them in 17-14. That's not going to get it done, I don't think, right? And then we have like one of the bad losses of the season. And I don't want to make too big of a deal out of it because SC lost twice to them, but last season, but Oregon loses to Stanford. So now Oregon coming off this huge win against Arizona at home. Maybe we have some momentum. We got our full lineup, all that stuff. And now they're 11-9 and Pomovoy has them projected to finish the season, I guess, 17-14. Probably not going to make it either. So, Pac-12 is starting to look like the true contenders now for the NCAA tournament are going to be limited to UCLA and Arizona, and then Arizona State, USC, and Utah. And we'll see from that second group, the ones that make it. But a lot of the Pac-12 teams have kind of just like taken themselves out of it. I think Washington State has too many losses now. I don't think there's any chance they can get back into it. Washington, I guess hypothetically, has the worst record, but I mean, you know, I don't think anyone thinks that they're going to make a serious run for the NCAA tournament. So, you have any thoughts of the other Pac-12 games we saw Thursday and then yesterday?
Yeah, the Oregon Stanford one really stands out, right? I mean, Stanford going into that that Oregon week, they were 0-7 in the conference, and they sweep the Beavers and then Oregon. So, I guess Jared Haas is alive, and they still have a functioning program up there in the Bay. So I guess congrats to them on the win. The Oregon thing, they're so up and down, right? Like, the thing with them is like you've got that game that SC's going up to Eugene in early February there, and I just don't know what to expect. I mean, they could like blow out USC and I wouldn't be shocked, and USC could blow them out and I wouldn't be shocked. So that's I think out of all the games left, that's the one I just don't have a feel for.
What do you think? I mean, I didn't watch the game, but Khalil Ware only played 6 minutes. That seems weird to me. I don't look, Dane Altman, I guess, knows what he's doing, but if you look now, Khalil Ware, the last three games combined, he's played a total of 27 minutes. He had a decent game, I guess, against Cal and that huge win, but and that was a game they won by 30, and he only played 12 minutes. Is Altman just, you think he's given up on him? I'm just don't know what to make of this exactly, and why, you know, he's not. You'd think that if they've already kind of established that he can play the four a little bit with Dante as the five, but they've gone away from that, and now he just almost feels like he doesn't have a spot on the roster.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. He's a really good rim protector. He rebounds okay. I mean, he's not Dante on the glass. He's not as good as Biddle on the glass either. Maybe Altman views like Biddle as more of a stretch piece than Ware. but that's, you know, I think Ware might even be a better shooter. So it's hard to say. I mean, who knows what's going on behind the scenes in practice and that sort of thing. Maybe Ware's already checked out and, you know, looking towards the NBA, and he wants to prevent Biddle from transferring to like a St. Mary's type or something like that. But yeah, I mean, what do you think of the whole, like, just these last like year and a half of Altman, right? I mean, like, this guy was widely considered the best coach in the Pac-12, and, you know, this is looking like a second straight year where they're not going to make the tournament.
Yeah, second straight year they're not going to make the tournament. And even when they, you know, won that technical conference championship over SC in 2021, I mean, that was basically because they played two fewer games, right? I mean, it was kind of a
– yeah.
Now, they had had success against Colorado that we had – you know, we couldn't get over that Colorado hump. But, they, you know, we played them in the NCAA tournament. It was basically a cakewalk for us. They had lost in the Pac-12 tournament by, you know, 10 to Oregon State. You know, they have not been the same since 2017. Now, I know they've had those good years when they had Pritchard and then, you know, Duarte in two of those, Pritchard senior year and then Duarte junior and then hit the next year for him. So those were good years. They had made, you know, I don't know how far they would have gone in 2020, the COVID year, when they had Pritchard and Duarte. You know, they did win the Pac-12 title that year. So, you know, Altman's still doing it, but it didn't feel like the same level of like intimidating Oregon team as we'd seen in, you know, past years. And I even think, like, going back to that 20, like, probably his best recent team, right? That 2020 team, where the COVID year team, like, for example, SC went up there. That was the game that went into double overtime, and then Oregon finally wins in double overtime, kind of pulls away. But SC didn't, you know, was pretty shorthanded over a talent. I mean, they had Okongwu, but after that, you know, Jonah Matthews, and, you know, just trying to eke out as many points as they can. And Oregon's really, really struggling at home against SC in that game. He's recruited a lot of big name, flashy name players and mixed them in, and some have worked, some have not. You know, that one year, you know, he had guys like Addison Patterson and, you know, CJ Walker. I mean, those guys just kind of like washed out of the program very quickly. You know, Walker's now, I think, at USF or UCF and barely playing. I don't even know if Addison Patterson ever, did he catch on anywhere? I don't think so. So no. I think part of it is he was not, you know, he had Francis Okoro, right? Okoro is playing pretty decently for St. Louis. Miles Norris playing pretty decently for Santa Barbara. I feel like he had not scouted well enough the guys he was recruiting. I mean, and, you know, all programs run into that problem, but he has not had a lot of success with high school recruits. And really, and since, you know, when he was going back to when he recruited like Dylan Brooks and Boucher and Jordan Bell and Tyler Dorsey, and then Peyton Pritchard. Now, maybe this upcoming class will bring him back, because it's a, you know, he's got the two McDonald's All-Americans, and then he's got the local kid. So maybe he comes back a little bit. But yeah, this is, something has happened with that program. They are no longer kind of a big, scary program they used to be. And will that change with Kwame Evans and Mookie Cook and Jackson Schalstad? I don't know. Maybe, but I don't know. It doesn't feel like it to me. And I'm wondering, I mean, Altman's not a spring chicken. I'm wondering how much longer he wants to stick around. But anyway, those are my thoughts.
Yeah. It's easy to take Peyton Pritchard and Chris Duarte, I think, for granted. And, you know, I agree with you, like, the Pritchard and Duarte teams weren't the level of those teams with Dylan Brooks and Jordan Bell. But, you know, Dylan Brooks was one of the best Pac-12 players of the last decade. I mean, he was exceptional in college.
Yeah.
Just a total killer, like, late clock shot maker, just really, really good. I'm it's kind of stunning to me that the NBA missed on him. Like, you know, the fact that he had to do like several years in college with the production because the NBA thought he was a tweener was ridiculous. And then obviously he's outperformed that in the NBA and had a very good, you know, run with the Grizzlies here. But, you know, Pritchard, his senior year was exceptional, I thought. And then Duarte, statistically, if you go back and look at what he did on both ends of the ball in his senior year, he was awesome. I mean, he, I know he lost out on Pac-12 Player of the Year honors to Evan Mobley. And I think Evan, you know, it was well-deserved. He was exceptional too, but Duarte was great. He was really good. And they just haven't, I think people looked at Richardson of maybe being that next guy who, you know, stayed 4 years and just was the super efficient offensive player. And he kind of just plateaued, and Dana's gotten into trouble with these like kind of flashy transfers that are kind of more like name than substance and didn't really have the efficiency at their previous stops. I'm thinking of like Davion Harmon, Jermaine Cuisenard. I know he's had like a decent start to his run at Oregon.
Well, Rumi, you know, never really lived up, I think, to, I mean, he played pretty well, but not to the level of maybe you would think that he was going to come in there and be all conference player.
Yeah. So, you know, I think, I even look back at that year when they had Anthony Mathis, right? It was the COVID year. Mathis was kind of less heralded. He came over from New Mexico, but just a really good shooter there. And he comes to Oregon and doesn't turn the ball over and, you know, shoots over 45% from three and had the number three offensive rating in the country in his year at Oregon. So he kind of got away from like guys like that and went for the bigger names that had the counting stats and maybe like were a four-star in high school. And I kind of wonder how this like next recruiting class is gonna go for them. I'm not the biggest fan of Kwame Evans and Mookie Cook. I know Mookie Cook slid in the ratings and is now like in the 20s. So I really question whether he can make a positive impact, at least on next year's team. I do like Jackson Schellstad a lot, though. He's going to be a really good guy for them, and maybe he ends up being the next Peyton Pritchard and four-year killer player for them. So definitely, like, I guess we only have one more year in the Pac-12, right? So it's
So that's the thing. So I mean, I'm going back to the 2018-2019 team where you remember. So this is the team where he brought in this, I mean, absolutely crazy recruiting class with Louis King and Francis Okoro, Miles Norris, and Bol Bol. And Bol gets hurt out and just shoots lights out, shooting over 50% from three, killing it. I mean, just off the charts, effective field goal percentage, dominating. And then he gets hurt. And that was kind of like a bit of a, you know, they're just not quite the same. Now, that was a team where they actually made the NCAA tournament, made the Sweet 16, lost to Virginia, relatively competitive match, because then this kind of made a little bit of the Dana Altman legend. I mean, I think they won the Pac-12 tournament that season, and they didn't necessarily need to win it, but it was like they needed to like make the championship game to get in, and they ended up winning it. That's the year, you know, that was Washington's big year where they won the conference, and, you know, we had Kevin Porter and kind of a crazy situation there. But that, you know, after that year, you know, Bol Bol leaves, Louis King is gone. Will Richardson was a freshman on that team also. So, like, you know, Miles Norris ends up leaving. So Will Richardson is like the only kind of guy that stayed consistent with the program. He was there with Peyton Pritchard, but it was a, you know, you kind of just started the process, I think, for what he thought was going to be this, you know, just huge amount of talent that was going to overwhelm people. And it just kind of hasn't worked out that way. I do wonder if next year's class is going to have a similar situation with these big names. Schellstad's not as big of a name as a really good player. Completely agree. And then the other thing I just wonder, you know, look, next year's the last season. This is Altman's 25th season in coaching. He's not that old. He's like 64, but next year is the last season of UCLA and USC in the Pac-12. So Oregon, the fate of the Oregon athletic program going forward after next season is uncertain. And we don't know. I mean, if they get invited to the SEC, I'm sure that's very exciting. That's a new challenge. If they go to the Big 12, that could be an exciting challenge because, yeah, Texas and Oklahoma are gone, but they're going to be some really good teams, especially basketball teams in the Big 12, Baylor and Kansas, obviously TCU. I don't know. I don't know how much – there does not seem to be nearly the vigor in that Oregon Ducks program that there used to be. And I just don't know. It's going to – you know, it's in a way a little bit of a sadness because then the next season, that's it. You know, next season's it, and we're going to part ways with schools like Arizona, and we're not going to be playing in McHale anymore. So I don't know what the future holds for a program like Oregon, and, you know, when where they're at right now, I don't see – you know, look, they could turn around and win, you know, if they have whatever, 11 conference. Maybe they go 7-4, close it out, great, or 8-3. It's not going to make a huge difference. I don't think that's going to get them to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we can, like, maybe close on this. Just kind of reverting back to the Pac-12 discussion, you know, I know we've – kind of struggled all year to pick out like who the third best team is. I think it's now USC. What do you think, Chase?
I think SC is proved on the court, right? Because the challengers, yeah. If you assume UCLA and Arizona top two, the challengers are Utah, Arizona State, Colorado, I guess Oregon as well. SC's not played, but those three, and SC's beat all of them on the court, including Arizona State in Tempe. So I think USC's got the claim right now, and I think tomorrow we're going to have we'll probably get some bracketology stuff tomorrow that's going to show that SC is probably, if it sees it in today, in at, you know, not a last four in at like a 10 or 11 seed is my guess. I'm not sure about this. Also, I think I posted on the forum that when you control for just quad one and quad two games and they eliminate teams that don't play enough, like haven't played at least six of them, SC is actually number 31 in the country. So that's a, you know, I don't know if that's a perfect barometer of where we are, but if it kind of pushes aside some of the clutter surrounding, you know, these narrow wins against the likes of Oregon State and, you know, Vermont, stuff like that. And you get to see what's it like when they play other good teams, and they're about number 31 in the country right now. And I think that's probably a solid call of where we are.
I think that even like that might be underselling it a little bit too. And here's my case for that is that like USC, they lost to Tennessee in overtime by 7, right? But that's a game that after 40 minutes was tied, right? But then it goes into the like analytics as a 7-point loss. And like, I know you played 5 extra minutes, but that's, you know, pretty minimal, right? And then versus ASU, right? That was an 8-point win. But after 36 minutes, you led by like 22 or 24. And then in the BYU game in the Bahamas, right? Like that was a double-digit game. And then Jackson Robinson jacks up a few contested threes and hits it. So I think we've been like just really good overall in those games. You know, it doesn't mean that, you know, USC is a top 10 or top 5 team or anything like that. But you know, we throughout the year, like we've been pretty consistent in bringing it. So that's something to, I think, continue to monitor and watch moving forward. But it just goes into kind of my frustrations with the whole like net pom thing, right? Like, here's an example. So Utah, right? They played Washington yesterday, and they beat them by 25. And they jumped 15 spots in the net. So they went from 62 to 47 in the net. Whereas, you know, USC goes to Tempe and wins by 8, even though they were up by 24. They don't jump 15 spots. They jumped 7 spots from 69 to 62 in the net. So not that like net's a be all end all or anything like that, but I just think that the, you know, the NCAA and the selection committee, like, relying on this thing as one of the metrics. And it's not a primary metric, like it's just one consideration, but there are definitely flaws in the algorithm. And I know they made a big deal about how, oh, after 20 points, margin of victory is not considered. Well, that might be true, but part of the formula in the net is efficiency. And if you're beating a team by 40, you're going to look way more efficient than if you're beating a team by 20.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely true. So, yeah, I'm still trying to settle on where exactly we are as a team. I actually am somewhat look, you look at that first 36 minutes against Arizona State, and if that's where we are as a team, that's pretty impressive. It also matches the last half against UCLA, right? So that's potentially very good. I don't know if the Arizona thing is just you have to put a huge asterisk next to it because of the atmosphere, and or maybe just Arizona is really good and they just have letdowns in certain games. They didn't have a letdown against USC or UCLA. So I don't know exactly. I think it's hard to pigeonhole these teams because there's so much movement. Obviously, I guess I need to bring up that my hometown Loyola Marymount knocks off Gonzaga at home for the first time. I mean, the numbers are just absolutely crazy. Like, I think Gonzaga had won 113 consecutive games against West Coast Conference teams that were not St. Mary's and BYU. They'd won however many games at home consecutively, just crazy. And then, you know, they lose that, they kind of come back, struggle with Pacific. So now, like, in Gonzaga, four of their last five games have all been single digit games, either wins or losses. And, you know, so they're, you know, that's Gonzaga, you know, and Houston loses today to Temple, you know, and that was a home game, a home loss to Temple. And by the way, Khalif Battle, I think, only scored 7 points in that game. So, you know, it's not like the guys were necessarily going off, and that's the reason. So it's a weird year, hard to pigeonhole these teams. I do think SC, if you put them on a neutral court, you put them on certain courts, they can compete against almost anybody. Now, maybe they can't compete against Arizona, I don't know. Although that could be different if Vince comes around. So it's hard for me to pick where SC is. I just know when you open up KenPom and you look at the list, and like number 13 is Creighton and they have 8 losses, you know, it doesn't exactly make you think that like any of these teams are particularly unbeatable. Ohio State, number 19, 11-8 record. I mean, having lost 5 in a row before coming back to beat Iowa. So I don't know, that those are my thoughts. And I think some of this stuff, when these ratings, it's like too much stuff gets locked in early and you don't see how teams develop over the course of the season. And, you know, like, honestly, like Creighton, Arizona is number 15. Creighton is number 13. They already played earlier this year, right? And it was a close game, and Arizona won by 2, but I bet you anything if they played on a neutral again tomorrow that Arizona would win by 15 points, if not 20. That's just my thoughts. So anyway,
it's a lot of these rankings too, right? Like, it, you know, Creighton's just one example of it, but then you look through it, right? St. Mary's 7, Marquette 8, Rutgers 21, Indiana 20, Ohio State 19, Boise State 25 with 5 losses, San Diego State at 27. Like, I think USD would smoke them on a neutral. Duke looks bad. Another 31. But then, like, you know, Oklahoma State, you know, Iowa, Maryland, Oklahoma, you know, all these teams, right? And it ties back to our conversation from, you know, our prior pod, where, you know, after you get past the first couple teams here, and really, like, I know we talked about, like, you know, the core, like, 8 above the other, and I think that's even starting to break down a little bit, right? Like, Texas looks beatable. Kansas just got destroyed by TCU.
Yeah. Like, who's right? in the eight now? I don't know if Arizona would have to be in the 8. They weren't in the 8 when I made it, put it together before. So, I mean, Alabama still looks really tough. Tennessee looks very tough.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really hard to pick these. Props to Purdue for holding a 19-1 throughout the season, but I guarantee you the row of Purdue losses are coming. I'm predicting it. So how about, you know, Shaka Smart, Marquette? They're ranked number 8. I mean, this is the quietest number 8 I can imagine. I know they're 8-2 in the Big East, so props to them. But I don't know. All right, anything else before we get out of here?
Yeah, let's just give our UCLA picks. I'll give you the floor here.
Okay, well, first off, let's look at what the KenPom says. 6.1 for UCLA. I'm guessing the line opens 4.5. I don't know if it goes up or down. Oh, I hate picking this game. Okay, so all I'm going to say is that I place SC's chances of winning at above 1%, so as to make my – I would not trade the outcome of predetermined one and two. So that's I'll place.
Boo.
You pick them. This is your game. What do you want? You're going to get credit or you're going to get credit or blame?
I know. I think I said 40% coming into the Arizona weekend. I think you got to increase it a little bit just because we look better against ASU than they did for the vast majority of that game. And, you know, the Arizona, like neither school played Arizona that great. So I'll bump it to like 45%. I think UCLA by a possession, I guess, is what I'll go with.
Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah. And yeah, I just do not know what to expect. I don't know what team's going to show up. I don't for either team.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could definitely remember last year it was a weird game where Isaiah didn't even play, but then Hawkes was hurt. And, you know, it was just Drew went crazy. I think Boogie didn't even score. I mean, all the kinds of crazy stuff happens, especially when we play Galen. So, I'm hoping, but we'll see. We'll have to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And all the LA people get to Galen. It's going to be a big game. If you've never been to a USC UCLA game at Galen, it's one of the games where it's actually a full arena and great atmosphere. So get out and support the team.
Absolutely. And fight on everyone.
Fight on.